The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
And that would be Ethan Harris. He is Chief U.S. Economist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, and he's joining us on the Ring Central phone line. Good morning, Ethan.
Good morning.
So here she is, Janet Yellen. We got the prepared statement yesterday afternoon, so we knew kind of the general thrust of what she would say. Now we've just gotten a few, you know, questions and answers out of Ms. Yellen. What's your takeaway so far?
Well, I think she's checking all the boxes. I mean, she needs to counter the view that she's not concerned about inflation or not concerned about asset price bubbles. So she's making it very clear that while she supports the current Fed policy of quantitative easing and zero interest rates, that when the time comes to back off and pull out some of that easy policy, she's quite ready to do it. So I think she's trying very hard to present herself as a balanced central banker.
I want to remind our listeners that your team at B of A was one that had said you did not anticipate. You weren't looking for the September taper. You thought it would come a little bit later in the year. When you hear Janet Yellen saying that the best way to get back to normal policy is to maintain, basically she's saying keep using these monetary policy tools. I assume she's talking about QE, right? Does that make you think that maybe now this view that the September taper is more likely, the March taper?
No, I don't think it's clear at all at this stage. I mean, she carefully ducked that question in her testimony and said basically they're watching the data as it develops. I think the case for the Fed tapering in January, which is our current call, is by then they'll have seen 2 months of clean post-shutdown data, so they'll have a sense of where the economy is. And we'll also presumably have been through the next brinkmanship moment in Washington. Remember, we have to; they need to pass a new continuing resolution in January, and we think we'll get through that without a shutdown. So by the end of January, we think the Fed will feel comfortable enough to pull the trigger. You know, we view the events of the last few months, the shutdown, the delay in the tapering, as really just kind of a pause in the Fed's move to the exit, not as, you know, a major change. We still think they're on track to taper probably in January.
Hi, Ethan. Barry Ritholtz here. A couple of questions for you. First, I loved the morning notes that your research department put out, one of which was titled "Gelling with Yellen." I was terribly amused by that, but it raises an interesting question, which is how much of what we're seeing in D.C., how much of this hearing is really just for show, and it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that she's going to get the actual position and continue policies that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think it is a bit of political theater here. I mean, she's definitely going to get some opposition, and she'll probably have, you know, a few people from the committee vote against her nomination. She'll have a number of senators in the overall confirmation oppose her. But it's hard to imagine them actually rejecting her outright. I mean, we're talking about a person who's got almost perfect credentials to be the head of the Fed. She's been a governor several times. She's been a president. She's got a very strong academic background, very well-versed in every issue of monetary policy. And I also think for opponents of her, there must be still a little bit of a shyness about taking on what is a popular appointment right after an unpopular government shutdown. Mm-hmm. So I think that the political and popular backlash against the shutdown in October actually helps Yellen get through this a little
easier. Doesn't hurt to be a woman either. I mean, many people say they want the best qualified person. You just ran through her qualifications, but that does seem to be let's face it, it's a strong point.
It is, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say she's the best qualified woman ever to head the Fed. I mean, you look back in history, we've had all male heads. You don't have actually that many senior female economists out there. Traditionally, men have tended to dominate the graduate programs. But this is a person who's actually done all the right stuff, and I would say most qualified woman ever. So if we're ever going to have that glass ceiling broken, it's going to be her.
We'll have to ask Larry Summers why that might be. the Senator Crapo, who had previously voted against both Bernanke as chairman and against nominee Yellen just as vice chair, was fairly gentle in his questions. You know, he's been against QE. He voted against the GM bailout. He's pretty significant when it comes to really pushing back against any sort of government intervention. Yet I thought he was kind of, I don't want to use the word tender, but he definitely was using kid gloves with her.
Yeah, I agree with you. I watched his questioning, and he asked all the questions to expect. Clearly, he's not comfortable with what the Fed's doing, but he didn't go after her, and that's a good sign for her.
Ethan, back to you. What kind of Fed chair will Janet Yellen be? And I know you're also monitoring this. What are we learning about her so far today?
Well, I think what we're learning is that, you know, Janet Yellen is a little bit on the dovish side of the Fed, but it doesn't mean that she's outside the mainstream of the Fed. Remember, she was one of the leading advocates of inflation targeting, the idea that you put down on paper a commitment to low inflation. That, to me, speaks of somebody who really wants to have a strong commitment to keep low inflation. On the other hand, we're also hearing the dovish side that this is, you know, when the economy's weak, you know, you focus on the weak economy. I mean, right now, I don't really think the Fed has a tough decision. We have a very incomplete economic recovery, very low inflation, well below the Fed's target. You know, keeping their foot planted in the accelerator, I think, is a simple call. And I think she will continue in that same path that, you know, Ben Bernanke has set here. But if we get stronger growth, as they're expecting and we expect, then they can start taking their foot off the accelerator. So right now, she's really just very much a continuation of the Bernanke legacy.
So Ethan, how dependent are we, and how dependent is this Fed on overseas growth? We saw the data out of Europe the past couple of days. I think surprised a lot of people with how soft it is. Now, you know, it's not a big surprise to have a surge from a low and then have it back off a little bit. But are we closely, and is the Fed closely looking at Europe and Asia, or are they more focused on the growth domestically?
Yeah. Well, I would say that certainly we shouldn't be looking to the global economy to drive the U.S. economy. And Europe may be out of a recession, but it's certainly not in a robust recovery. And, you know, Europe, to me, looks like a little bit of a Japan disease, where they're going to just be in a very slow growth environment for a long period of time. Really, the story for better U.S. growth is going to have to be domestic, and I think it's really the elimination of a headwind more than something positive. It's the end of fiscal austerity for a while, no more tax increases, no more significant spending cuts, and also I think a little bit less brinkmanship in Washington. I think each of these budget battles takes a chunk of confidence out of the economy, and so if we can get a year where they don't do a shutdown or don't threaten in a serious way a shutdown, I think we'll get better growth next year.
Well, you know, Ethan, on Tuesday I had a long sit-down with Dennis Lockhart, president of the Atlanta Fed, who is pretty much a centrist on the FOMC, not necessarily a hawk, not necessarily a dove. And he did say he's watching inflation. He would like to see it maybe moving up towards the target a bit before the Fed initiates the taper. I also asked him if it's fair to say that the Fed and him, if they are sort of predisposed toward the taper, right? I mean, and he said basically yes, that the bond purchases were supposed to be a rocket booster. It is not a permanent fixture of policy. He gave me the sense that he wants to see the signals, but he's ready to step through that door as soon as the Fed can. Do you get that same sense from Yellen?
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of what she said in her testimony. She said that we need to keep a close eye on the costs of QE going forward, and that those costs could rise over time. there are already a little bit of hints of that with the signs of bubbles in parts of the credit market. So I think the Fed, you know, is feeling a little bit uncomfortable with the size of their buying program. They're looking for some kind of a signal from the economy to so that they can start to
Ask you this. If they get to the next meeting, say December, January, if Ben Bernanke gets a sense that Janet Yellen is entirely on board with starting the taper, won't it make it kind of hard for him to start the taper? Then she takes over. She's not comfortable with the taper.
No, I don't. I think they're on the same page. I mean, they're very much on the same page in almost every aspect of Fed policy. And I think that the it would be a mistake actually for Bernanke to kind of think too hard about this and try to be clever. I think it's simple. He will do what he thinks is right from the point of view of the economy, and thereby Yellen will inherit a policy that makes sense. So I think the difference between the two is quite small right now in policy.
There's a little bit of game theory also in allowing her to take the first step towards a taper, which gives her some credibility with the hawks as opposed to the usual guys like Senator Crapo, as an example, who really wants to see no Fed intervention whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think that it's important for her credibility that, you know, she does establish herself as a centrist there. Now, I don't think that's a big driver of the exact timing. And in some ways, it's good that she's stepping in at a time where growth is likely to be picking up as these fiscal headwinds fade, because she can right out of the gate demonstrate that she has a balanced approach. And I do expect that from her. I don't think that she will shy away from the tapering. I think it's a much bigger decision to start raising interest rates. That's a big step, and that requires a sustained, solid economy. But the tapering decision, to me, is more of a technical adjustment, more of a recognition that we're not as in dire strait as we were going into the fiscal cliff.
But you're basically saying game theory or awkwardness in response to my question and Barry's question, that maybe that exists, but you're basically saying if Bernanke sees the need to taper, that the economy can take it in December or January, as you're looking for, Ethan, that that's a step he'll take and Janet Yellen will be on board and these other considerations will be secondary.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that one of the things that's always struck me, particularly with Bernanke, but I also think with Yellen, is they know that their toolkit is very limited, and if they try to be too clever and to try to do too many things at the same time, they'll lose their ability to meet their core objective. And their core objective is very simple. It's real healing in the U.S. economy. So I don't think they try to be very clever about this. I think they basically focus on the growth picture. They didn't taper in September because growth just wasn't coming in as well as expected. If growth comes in at a reasonable pace in the next few months, then they taper. So I don't think the Fed call is as complicated as sometimes people present it. I think it's as Bill Clinton used to say, it's the economy, stupid.
So Ethan, how much of what the Fed is left with policy choices is a function of the fact that monetary policy seems to be the only game in town? And fiscal policy is non-existent. There is no fiscal stimulus. It's purely ZIRP right. And QE.
Yeah, and I think that one of the great ironies of what's going on in Washington is that critics of the Fed, who think the Fed shouldn't be doing quantitative easing, are the same folks who say they'll never do fiscal stimulus and who are threatening shutdowns and hurting the economy. So they're kind of, it's almost like they're forcing the Fed to be the to do what they don't want the Fed to do. So it's a tough. They have to feel a little nervous here, you know, being the only game in town, and knowing that, honestly speaking, they don't have that much ammunition left. Let's say, God forbid, that something really ugly happens: a European crisis meltdown, a big oil shock. Where's the reaction? Where's the policy reaction? You get virtually nothing out of Congress, and the Fed, you know, has already pulled almost all the levers it can. they've got in the back of their mind worry a bit about that it's feeling a little lonely there for the Fed.
Charles Plasser really saying what he has said in the past, limited effect on the real economy now from bond purchases, Ethan, and there's a large contingent that say, yeah, QE1 worked, but now there's just no real sense in continuing going, obviously arguing for the taper easy as he has in the past.
Yeah, well, I would, you know, to me, QE1 was obvious. We needed a big jump start to the economy, very strong benefits in terms of just avoiding a much worse outcome. With each new round of QE, though, it's become less powerful. But I still think that there's a case for it. I think it still does help keep interest rates down and promote growth.
Ethan Harris, thank you so very much. He's chief U.S. economist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.